All right. Welcome to episode 16 of the 100 of Some Movie Thing podcast. We are today looking at number 85 on the AFI's Top 100 Movies of All Time 10th Anniversary Edition. Night at the Opera, the Marx Brothers film from 1935.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. All right, so this is the Marx Brothers. There are five of them, aren't there?
There were five. There was Groucho.
Okay.
Chico.
Uh-huh.
Or Chico. A lot of people call him Chico, but we can get to that later.
Okay.
Chico. Harpo.
Harpo.
Zeppo. And Gummo.
Gummo.
Yes.
And how many of them are in this film?
Three of them. Harpo.
Okay.
Chico.
Okay.
Groucho.
Okay.
Zeppo had left.
Zeppo left.
Actually, I'm going to have to look up the Gummo reference, because that might have been something later. Anyway, I'm not quite entirely sure. But I know Zeppo was in the first several Marx Brothers films when they were with another production studio.
Uh-huh.
This was their second film for MGM under Thalberg.
All right.
So that is where we are. I am looking forward to this, to finally expunge the last of the Bringing Up Baby.
Don't even say its name.
And also to get the platoon stink out of my head.
Ew.
So, without any further ado from me or from you, why don't we
start this damn movie?
Watch this movie.
Let's watch it.
And this should be a lot of fun.
All right.
All right, cool.
Let's do it. Okay. Wow. All right. That is definitely a lot better than I was expecting. Holy shit. Wow. What is that? Oh my God.
What?
You're scaring me. What the?
I was just thinking of that one thing that they did in that movie.
They did multiple things.
I know. I was thinking of all of them.
Oh. Okay. All right. So, quick Google search. We found out that Gummo Marx was part of the Vaudeville Act, and then he got drafted into the U.S. Army in World War I.
Yes.
So he was never actually had a film career, and Zeppo
left the act when the Marx Brothers left Paramount Pictures. Zeppo left to become an agent.
Their agent, actually.
Their agent, yes.
Yeah, so, okay, so that works. So I guess that explains away everything, so there's nothing dirty, or none of them died, or anything like that. So
well,
I guess
they all eventually died.
Well, no
Are you sad now? Do you have sad?
Why would I be sad?
I don't know.
We have comedians. Nobody's sad about comedians.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Anyway. Anyway, so, okay, so this movie.
Yes.
This movie, at the same time, was one of the funniest that I've ever seen, and at the same time, didn't make a lick of sense. I didn't understand what the fuck was going on for about 30 minutes.
Okay, so, a brief synopsis of the film, because this movie and the prior one in 1934, which was not coming up on my phone at the moment, 1934, they did. Damn, this is tough. We're filling. Oh, maybe this
stalling,
was.
Stalling.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, this was their first film for. This was their first film for MGM.
Yeah, because before that they had Animal Crackers and what was the other one?
Duck Soup, Horse Feathers, Monkey Business, Animal Crackers, and the Coconuts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Those were for Paramount.
I see.
So, we have... okay, so this was their first film for MGM.
Uh-huh.
And with MGM, they also got plot.
Did they?
Yes.
So I take it that...
Instead of... If you took all the comedy elements, essentially, out of this picture...
You'd still have a plot.
You would have the story of a businessman who's kind of, he's not a philanderer. Well, he might be a philanderer. He's a con man slash he's trying to get with the rich lady, and he's going to finance. He's trying to get her into society.
Yeah, they keep saying, like, society, get me into society.
Get me into society!
What the fuck is society?
Mr. Driftwood.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Driftwood. Yeah. The guy's name is Driftwood.
Yeah.
What is society? Is that, like, high class or something?
Or is she
to be integrated in society?
Well,
is she a gorilla in women's clothing?
She inherited $8 million.
$8 million.
From her late husband.
Yeah.
But didn't, apparently...
Didn't inherit the
title or the status or anything that went with that.
Evidently, yeah. Yo.
Or something. So that may just be something that we're not going to be aware of because, you know, we're not living in the 30s.
Or
we don't understand how that works.
With $7 or $8 million.
Yes. Well, you know, Groucho does say that when he's not after her money.
Because when he first tried
to hook up with her, he only thought she had $7 million.
The extra million didn't change my feelings of her at all.
Exactly.
There were so many bad puns in this film.
But they're just so good.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the thing. And there's so many just amazing, just one-liners and offhand remarks and just the scene they knock that guy out in the clown suit and he's laying on the floor and Groucho has his foot up on his chest and when Chico comes over to talk to him. He's like, "May I?" And he puts it. And he's like, "Yeah, go ahead." Puts his foot up on the guy's leg, like you're standing at a bar.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll have two beers. Like, all right, I'll have two beers too. And it's like, it's straight up stand-up comedy in the vaudeville style.
Yeah,
where they're just telling jokes back and forth. Chico answers half the questions with non sequiturs
or puns or. Hey, I just forgot who I came back here to look for. Do you know? Would you happen to know who that is?
I just happened to think of who he was. Yeah, it's like
okay, cool.
Yeah. We're just failing miserably at repeating any of it, which is awesome for the retelling for the audience. Anyway, so
they just watched it. They know what the hell we're talking about.
The basic story here is for those that didn't just watch it along with us.
You are silly.
Is that Driftwood is trying to have some money for himself, so he's cozying up to this widow who has a lot of money. He's trying to get her into the opera scene because it will increase her stature with society, in quotes. He hooks her up with an agent who is the general manager of a New York opera, which is a weird thing because, and we'll get to that in a minute, but they then get on a boat and they have met at this point a young tenor and his love, the leading lady, and they also know the evil tenor, who is the bad guy of the piece.
By the way, they're all in Italy when they're doing this.
Right, but we don't find that out for a half an hour, and I know why. I found out why.
Okay.
Okay, so originally when the film came out, it had a title card, and it said... Italy, where people do something all day and go to the opera at night. And there is a song at the beginning of the film where we are passed along the street in Milan by the singing. And it's basically like a musical kind of thing where basically just this couple sings and then these people over here sing and then those people over there sing.
Yeah.
The only way we know that this happened is because there was a mention of, you know, it's in the script, and there's mention of notes, and the when it was re-released in the 40s,
they cut it.
Since we were at war,
they cut it with Italy.
They cut it out.
Well, it's just
they also
weird.
Cut the negative, so that scene is entirely lost.
Huh.
Yeah. So
that sucks.
Yes. Yeah, it does. So the action moves from the opera house in Milan to a ship crossing the ocean to New York, where we have a night at the opera, which is a zany There's like Robin Hood rope tricks and
yeah, that was pretty cool.
And basically anything that you could possibly do in an opera
on a stage
house to screw it up, to screw up the performance or whatever. I mean, people interrupting performances, taking wigs off of people, changing costumes, running back and forth across the stage, running the backdrops up and down during the songs, flying across the stage on a rope and, you know, knocking people over, dropping sandbags on people, hitting people in the head with a hammer. Everything that you could possibly think it was here in this film. But that's one of the treats with the Marx Brothers. They are true comedy anarchists.
Huh.
There was no, up until this point, their films, they had kind of a plot to string their gags together.
Uh-huh.
But they were just zany. They were just nuts. There was no, like, there was no, you know, love story. There was no, you know, thread that took the, you know, that went, there was no beginning, middle, and end. Like, with this film, there was.
Yeah.
And they had the star-crossed lovers, and they had, because, you know, she's the lead, and the lead tenor wants her to be with him, so he's going to steal her away to New York and leave her boyfriend, who was just a chorus boy, basically, in the lurch in Italy. He stows away, they get to New York, and he ends up singing to replace the tenor, and, you know, getting his job.
Yes.
Taking his job at the end, which is, oh, so very wonderful. But, yeah, it is, God, just seeing the zaniness and the wackiness of the Marx Brothers after the supposed wackiness and zaniness that was supposed to be bringing a baby. See what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You see the difference there?
Yeah, that's actually
a
lot better.
You see how important a straight man is?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
If you don't have a foil, the cop in the scene, it was overblown and it was a little nutty, you know, when he's running back and forth between the rooms and they keep running around in the balcony and taking the beds out and he's like, I'm going crazy, there used to be four beds. I mean, it's kind of dumb on its face, but it also works because there's physical comedy.
Yeah.
And he is trying to deal with this changing situation. He has no idea what's going on. He has, you know...
Yeah, but he's also not standing there cracking jokes as well.
2 seconds and thought about it. Yeah, and he's not, you know, whoop, 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 you know, doing any kind of crazy, wackety stuff to be as zany as the Marx Brothers. Or to be as zany as everybody else in the picture.
Yeah.
The girl... Not nutty.
Yeah, that's true.
The tenor.
Not nutty.
Not nutty.
Not nutty.
You know.
Singing. Yes.
The other
fucking stop singing. But
the agent or the general manager of the New York theater, a little nutty.
Little bit.
Over the top has the long goatee.
Yeah.
And has the German accent. You know, so he's a little zany, and he goes around chasing people around and.
And, he puts on, you know, a costume.
Puts on his coat and puts on Groucho's coat and gets mistaken for him and hit in the head with a frying pan and, you know, tears holes in things and...
Yeah, there was also...
Gets stuck in a locker.
There was also that really weird subplot, like, to get the good tenor and his two friends off the boat, because they were stowaways.
Right.
Was to steal the beards of three Italian aviators who all slept in the same bed with their beards sticking out.
They're brothers. They were brothers.
Were they?
The mayor of New York said, you and your brothers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, does that help?
No.
Not really.
No.
Yeah, I know.
No, they all slept in the same bed, straight, ramrod straight, with their beards out. And
well, you're not going to sleep with your beard under the covers. That's too much. That's too much warm.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's okay. Like an extra blanket.
My mistake.
Yeah, you're going to let that air out. You're going to let that breathe.
So you can have it
obviously
stolen by
had
a
to
fucking
let it
nightmare
breathe.
Fuel Harpo?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ!
That was
nightmare fuel.
That was a funny thing that Drew started saying in the middle of the film while Harpo was... Harpo has just swung around on a rope on the outside of the ship, being dipped into the ocean 3 or 4 times.
You want an out-of-context nightmare?
He climbs up the side of the boat into the window of this stateroom and then stands there and looks at these guys. And one of the things about the Marx Brothers that you can if you watch what they're doing, not just what they're saying, there is such an intensity.
Yeah.
There, they are committed, but it is this. There's just this like glint of psychosis in their eyes, and Harpo,
especially in Harpo,
gets the idea to cut these guys' beards, and you can see the wheels turning in his head, and he gets these big saucer-shaped eyes.
He has
he
those
has this
all the fucking
intense
time.
Intense look on his face, and he goes after those beards like, it's just,
no, it's just
it's almost disturbing. But he then lifts the beard. One of the beards up, and a moth flies out.
Yeah, what the fuck? What the fuck? Okay, so he comes out of the window. He's soaked to the bone, mm-hmm. and he's just with the saucer eyes that he has the entire movie. His hair is all skewed. God, I wish we could find a clip so we could just post it on the site. And he's just staring at everything, and then he looks at the beards.
Mm-hmm.
And then he looks over and he reaches and he pulls out a pair of scissors and he smiles. The motherfucker smiles.
He smiles, yes. But
big old wide-eyed, like...
That taut...
Buck-tooth grin. And he just, like, walking over and it's just like, well, I'm gonna be scared. I'm terrified of barbers now. Fuck that.
Yeah, okay. So, the other thing that the fro here was introduced to was the musicality of the Marx Brothers.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people forget that although, you know, they're these anarchic comics that just do the wackiest things, and they talk in non sequiturs, and they are very physical comedians. Not quite Three Stooges physicality, but still there's sandbags dropped on people's heads and hammers bring
thrown downstairs.
They get thrown down the stairs a lot. Harpo is climbing ropes and doing trapeze work and swinging around on uneven parallel bar type junk. And they did a lot of that themselves, no doubt. But there also is a scene on the boat where Harpo plays the harp, which is something that he does in every film. And Chico plays the piano, which is also something that he was famous for, very good at. But this scene... Okay, so they had cut the first card out of the film, so the print that we saw didn't have this information about, oh, we're in Milan.
Yeah.
So we're thinking, well, we must be in New York City, because everybody's speaking English.
English.
You know how we're supposed to know that we're in Milan?
How?
Everybody sings.
That is...
The waiter is the boy, oh boy, and she calls him over to the table. He's humming an opera tune. And
so
he goes
the
off
assumption
to
that all Italians...
Mr. Driftwood, paging Mr. Driftwood. But, so, yeah, that's the thing. It's the Italians...
All sing.
They sing.
Wow!
They sing all night. Yeah.
Wow!
Okay. So...
Okay.
The guy, the luggage porter...
Evidently everyone at MGM is a little bit racist.
Well, the porter...
Yeah.
...coming through the hallway,
is also singing, yeah.
The guy who bumps into the porter with the other porter with the other box of stuff... Also singing.
Oh my god.
Pretty much everybody who's an Italian in this film is singing in some way or another.
Huh.
Including the opera singers, who are all very much Americans.
Yeah.
But are also, you know, what the guy's name? Riccardo Baroni. that's the tenor that we like.
We are supposed to like.
And then Riccardo Baroni.
Okay, so
yes, hi, how you doing? I'm Riccardo Baroni. And I sing
for you now.
Yes. So there is a scene in this film where Harpo and Chico and Riccardo, they are in Groucho's stateroom, which is a closet, and they get hungry, so they go in search of food, and they go up onto the deck. And they're obviously near the back of the boat because there's a party going on that is filled with Italian peasants.
Yes, that's the other
who
thing.
Who are all for everything short of the Family Guy Italian stereotype where Peter runs around with the mustache saying boobity bop.
Yeah.
These guys are that guy, pretty much. They're all dressed in peasant, like,
mountain guard.
Paintings of Italian peasants are less stereotyped than the costumes that these people are in.
When they get to the food,
they get around to the backside of the party.
There's a
pasta bar, for lack of a better word.
Oh my god!
They have a giant bowl of pasta that a guy in a hat, you know, Chef Boyardee, hands them. Piles of spaghetti. They put sauce on it. They throw a whole thing of grapes. They get a wedge of cheese, an entire boule of bread,
yeah,
a bottle of Chianti. did I say the grapes already?
Yeah, you said
a Parma ham. So they walk away from this armful of food, which is,
and then, you know, they eat it all,
which is funny. And then smash cut to them, you know, rubbing their plates with their bread and finishing with, I'm so full I could sing.
So then
Alan Jones, the guy who essentially replaced Zeppo for the next three films, is an opera singer.
Oh, nice.
And he
sings.
Così cosa.
What the hell does Così cosa mean?
A song that basically means así, so-so. I'm okay. Everything. Does it mean yes? No. Does it mean no? Yes. And no. So he sings this song, and the Italian band strikes up, and they're singing, and then they're dancing, and they all of a sudden there's Tyrolean mountain garb wearing Italian peasants, complete with the hats with the feathers, with the like Italian lederhosen type. Oh my god, it was amazing. And it's all in black and white, of course, so, you know, whatever.
No color, but still.
But they're dancing and they're spinning and they're throwing up the skirts are up in the air with the feathery and the ruffles, and it's just, and it basically became an MGM musical for a scene. So there's dancing circles, and they're going one way, and then the circle outside them is going another way, and then there's a third circle that's going another direction, and you know, and they're singing this song that's supposed to be about Italy, but they're Italians, and they're singing it like they're talking about Italy as if they're Americans, which is,
yay, you know, writers.
That's how that works.
Yep,
that's just how that works in the movies.
All right,
which is awesome.
So
there's that. That's sort of the blackface moment for this film.
Nice.
Although, actually, no. Maybe Chico walking around with his Italian accent.
Well, no. See, that was what he did, though. That was his shtick.
Well, that was his shtick. Yes.
So I guess it's not racist if it's his shtick.
That's his thing. That's what he does.
It's what makes him funny.
And the legend of that, the legend of his Italian accent, is that when he was growing up in New York City, he had to basically cross the territories of several gangs. And so he became adept at... This is, like I said, this is the legend.
Okay.
It may not be true, may be true, I don't know. But this is...
Probably
I'm
going
to do myself to... I'm going to do everyone a favor here and perpetrate this myth.
Okay.
That he became he became adept at speaking English with an accent, so that he could blend in these various neighborhoods.
Bullshit! Bullshit!
Well, now you know it's going to be true.
Well, no, of course not.
You called bullshit on it.
I've called bullshit on that, because that guy could not do an Italian accent.
Oh, no, it wasn't a good Italian accent. It was a survivor.
The guy didn't even look Italian.
No.
You know, gangsters still have eyes. I mean, you know, the thing about Goodfellas is that everybody in that film looked Italian. Because they probably were.
Oh, come on. What does an Italian look like? Come on.
I'm not going to answer that.
Exactly.
I'm not going to answer that.
Because they look the same as... They look different as everybody else looks. That's right. That's what I'm saying. There's blonde hair. There's dark hair. There's light hair. There's everything.
Were you and I watching the same movie? Of Goodfellas?
Yeah.
There wasn't a single blonde in that entire film.
There were a few. Anyway, all right. So I don't know where we were going with that.
Anyway,
so they sit down at the piano and the harp.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And Chico starts to play because they do the song and they do the big dance number.
Right.
And that is Alan Jones's moment.
Now they have the contractually that's obligated his, everybody else
his
has to do
the second moment in the film. Well, now they have to do the Marx Brothers stuff.
Right.
So Chico sits down at the piano, plays a song. He's got kids surrounding him. It's very cute.
The fucking and, most and intense piano playing I've
amazing,
ever seen. Yeah.
Amazing. And he does his little finger. He has this dancing finger thing that he does on the piano keys where he's just like, he's got the slack finger thing that's flipping and he's totally in control. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome to watch even out of context.
Yeah. No kidding.
You know,
and then Harpo.
And then Harpo plays the piano a little bit too.
Fucks around.
He's just fucking around banging on the piano and closes his hand in the doors and breaks his hands and
and
flops on the keyboard. He plays a good song.
And then he goes
and
plays
then he goes
the harp.
Over to the harp and plays the same song on the harp that everybody else has played, and he gets those crazy eyes.
Yeah, he gets the crazy eyes.
He's concentrating so hard on that, and he still sort of comes across as pleasant, but you can see the concentration. You can see it, you know.
Did you notice that both the brothers got the same look on their face when they were playing their instrument of choice?
Oh, yeah.
Like, and his name just flew right out of my head. Not Harpo.
Chico.
Yeah. Was playing the piano. He had the same look on his face as when Harpo was playing the harp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got that.
It was just like, wow, that's amazing. Because they were both obviously very, very, very committed to playing this, and there was no one else in the room except for them.
Right.
And their instrument.
And yet they still managed to do some... There was some acknowledgement of the people around them. But it... That was the forced part.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, also I'm playing. I really need to be concentrating on this. But, oh, also I need to acknowledge that there's people around so that people would get a kind of a, yeah, there you go, wink, okay.
Oh, shit, he's got to act. He's like, no, I want to play. I want to play. Yeah,
but that, you know, that's that true performer-y kind of thing. And to watch them play, I mean, it's just amazing still to this day. I've always been impressed with their musical abilities.
Yeah.
In Duck Soup, which is coming up later on the list, you will get to see Harpo play and Chico play, and Zeppo will sing. And
really?
I believe Groucho will also sing in that one. He didn't sing. That's the one thing. Groucho did not sing.
Did Groucho have a talent other than slapstick?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He was a comedic singer.
Oh.
Yeah. So he did that. He has several songs to his credit.
All right.
The song there was a song in this film that became a hit outside of the film. It's the only film that produced a hit song, and that song was Alone, I believe, and it was sung by Kitty Carlisle and Alan Jones. And Kitty Carlisle sang all her own stuff.
Yeah.
And she was only in 11 films. But she did, I want to say she was also a opera singer, and more well known for that than for her movies.
Okay,
but this was her break. Getting in a Marx Brothers film
was a big deal
for her.
Okay,
you know,
nice.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah. And then Alan Jones also big break for him.
Yeah,
he did two more pictures with the Marx Brothers. And then was one of the first singers one of the Hollywood entertainers, one of the first to volunteer to go sing for the troops.
Oh, he did
during World War II.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was nice of him already.
All right.
So also, Groucho.
Yeah?
Although ostensibly the leader of the group, was younger than both Chico and Harpo.
I buy that.
and older than Zeppo.
So he was the third brother?
Are you third or fourth?
I think he was the third.
I don't know if he was older or younger than Gummo.
I don't have that. I think, no, Gummo was the fourth brother.
It was the fourth, so Groucho was third then.
I suppose so, yeah.
And Zeppo was the youngest.
I guess, yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. So, would you recommend other people watch this film just out of...
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, so, yeah, I guess we're in agreement on that. Cool.
Definitely. Definitely. So, is this film still relevant today?
Well...
Is it still... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Knowing history and what would follow soon after this film came out, anything that involves the Italians kind of made me feel a little uneasy, especially that part where they stole the beards of the three...
Aviators.
Italian aviators.
Who are on a boat.
That's not important. That is a little bit. I thought it was funny. Who are on a boat, and then they go and make a speech. They do...
Okay, so that joke...
No, let me finish.
When they tell that joke about what are they doing on a boat...
Yeah.
That sets up a joke later.
Yeah.
Which is pretty tight, I gotta say.
That is pretty good, yeah. And then they're done with their speeches. They're all outraged because they're all speaking boopity bop. They're all outraged and they all leave.
Yeah.
Except for Harpo. But before they leave, Driftwood says, "Of course, you know, this means war." And I couldn't help but go,
That's true. Yes. It did.
Yeah. Of course, you know, this means war. Oh.
Well, Duck Soup shortly before that had been or was that Animal Crackers? We'll figure it out. They do have some serious political farce.
Yeah, it seemed like... I'm not really sure if they were even aware of what they were doing, or if it was really kind of public knowledge that they were kind of on their way to going to war.
I don't think in 1935 that... I mean, it might have been public knowledge. I mean, Hitler obviously was already in power. Mussolini was already in power in Europe. I don't think that... I mean, it was 1939 before...
Pearl Harbor.
Before England. That was 41.
That was 41. That was way before Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, so 1939 is when World War II started, officially. The Germans invading Poland, and et cetera. So, you know, does that mean these guys were prescient? Maybe they were just making...
They could have just been
just making
jokes.
A joke.
And they just wanted... And they knew... They apparently were racist and wanted to go to Italy.
That's where opera comes from.
Don't care!
That's where opera comes from.
All
Come
right.
on.
Fine, whatever. Still, they would have killed them to have not have said... You know, it doesn't matter. You know what? Sign of the times does not matter. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that... That they said this means war, and
right?
Like,
well, that they had Italian aviators who
Italian
were on the
aviators
boat.
In their uniforms.
In their uniforms, Italian uniforms.
Yeah,
it
seems kind of interesting that they cut out the Italy during the re-release. That they cut
well,
out.
It was
the
difficult
first bit.
To tell. I mean, they didn't. There wasn't specifically anything about those guys that,
except for the whole. Of course, you know this means war.
Well, that yeah,
which was actually fun
but
fact.
That
was
would,
actually
that would make sense why that stayed in.
Yeah,
in
I guess,
the, in
yeah.
the re-release in the 40s.
Fun fact, though, Bugs Bunny used to say, said, of course you know this means war, because of that joke that
really?
That Marx made, yeah. That
Groucho Marx made.
Groucho Marx
really?
Made, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that quote is actually he copied
well,
that
I mean,
from
I
Bugs
knew
Bunny.
That, I knew that, wait, Groucho Marx copied it from
no,
Bugs
no,
Bunny
no.
or Bugs,
Bugs
Bunny
copied the writers of Bugs Bunny copied it from Groucho Marx.
Groucho
they
Marx.
Based his character.
Groucho Marx.
Groucho?
Yes.
They based Bugs Bunny's character on Groucho.
That I knew.
Yeah.
But I didn't know about the
this
war
means
thing.
War, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, this means war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Groucho Marx was also, there was a nod to Jack Benny in this film as well, when he was in the opera, in the box at the end, and he was talking about starting the season. It was the new, you know, the new season, and then he throws it to the conductor.
Yeah.
It says something, Don, what was it?
Oh God! It was
taken away, Don, or you're up or whatever. So yeah, but that was a Jack Benny joke.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
it's references within references.
A lot of timely stuff. A lot of not so timely stuff.
Yeah.
But pretty amazing overall. Very watchable. There's some weird. I mean, the jarring thing at the and you don't find out until like 30 minutes into the film when Groucho sells his hotel bill to a porter as an insurance policy. He sticks it into the guy's pocket, taps it, and they cut to.
Yeah, that's the thing that indicates they were actually ever in Italy.
And it shows the hotel name Milan, Italy, and I was like, they've been in Milan this whole time.
Yeah,
and now they're going to New York, which okay, that makes sense. But you know, those are little things. That's a tiny little kind of thing. And there's cuts and breaks and stuff in the film because
there were some kind of weird jumps.
The film's been out for what 85 years, 80 something years now.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, so it's a while.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was weird.
It breaks over time.
Well, it's a DVD. Never mind.
They had to print
Stop
it from somewhere.
My head.
Had to print it from somewhere.
I hate you. I hate you so fucking much.
I know.
All right.
It's all right.
So this is a really good movie. Uh-huh. It definitely redeems that era of films for me, especially after bringing up Baby. So I guess. I mean,
you must be getting over it because you haven't devolved into a hate-fueled rage fest.
Oh, we still got another 10 minutes. I mean, I could just
that's okay.
Lose
we don't,
my
we
fucking
don't,
mind.
We don't need to bring
just
it
go,
up.
Just go, bring it up, baby. It's terrible.
It wasn't bad enough for it to be this much of an issue. Now it's just kind of a joke.
Yeah, it's a funny one though.
All right, I'll give you. Okay.
All right. So, yeah. I guess this is really the best place that we can stop it, isn't it?
You think?
I guess.
Well, I suppose. All right, so we both like this movie.
We did, very
much. We both recommend that you put it on your queue and take a look at it.
Watch the shit out of it. It's awesome.
It is pretty awesome. There are some special features on the disc that are also pretty good.
A little bit of history.
Including an interview with Groucho where he tells a story about how Thalberg, their boss at MGM, he had this reputation for missing meetings or keeping people waiting.
Yeah.
And the first time they met with him, he kept them waiting for several hours.
Huh.
And while he was meeting, and what he did was his secretary ended up going home, and they moved the filing cabinets in her office in front of his door.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he couldn't get out of his office.
Oh.
And so then they let him out, and he was, oh, that's funny, blah, blah, whatever.
Give me a job.
He was less likely to be late for meetings with them at that point.
Nice.
Then one day, they were meeting in pre-production for this movie.
Uh-huh.
And they were actually in the meeting.
Yeah.
And he left to go meet with somebody else.
Okay.
So they called down to the commissary.
Oh, no.
And they ordered 8 baked potatoes.
What?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So he had gone to meet with somebody else, and they're in his office. They started a fire in his fireplace, a big roaring fire.
Oh, no.
And when he came back, they were toasting potatoes on sticks.
What?
In the office, naked.
Ah! Why?
Because they were the Marx Brothers.
Okay, evidently so.
Because that's the kind of things that they would do.
Jesus
that is
Christ.
Anarchist comedy. That is
anarchist comedy.
That is the kind of stuff that.
So this was not an act for them. They were just. This was just who they were.
Honestly, I think with some of the things that they do, of course they plan. They plan a lot of their stuff. You know, all the stunts and the music, and that takes rehearsal and things like that. But I honestly think there's a scene in this film where Harpo, they're eating breakfast in a hotel room.
Yeah.
And Harpo gets up, and he's doing shtick. He's doing things. They're like, passing pancakes around, and he's pulling the pancakes out and drizzling syrup on them and shoving them into his face.
And then he cuts
the cigar...
Awesome.
Groucho's cigar and rolls it into a pancake and eats that, and then he cuts Chico's tie and puts that into between pancakes and pours syrup on it
starts eating that.
And you know, they make a joke about him being half goat.
Yeah.
But the goat got the better half of the deal. You know, so he he's doing that. But that's the kind of stuff, though, that it's so well... It's like, I don't want to say rehearsed. Or even choreographed, because it's like they had done it so many times in their real life.
Yeah,
that when they were doing it on film, it just sort of poured out of them.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing, because you look at Groucho when he's watching his brother there, he's not looking at him like, oh, fuck this guy, come on. Which is what his character should be doing.
Yeah, it's just like,
he's watching him with this eye of like, this is my brother, this is what he does, I love this about him. And Chico, yeah, too. He's sitting there going, damn it, he does this every fucking day, and I love it, and he does it in public, and he does it at home, and he does it with his kids, and this is how they're, and that's how it comes across. Now, I could be totally wrong about that, and I could be watching this happen and saying, you know, wow, that's a really rehearsed bit that they obviously wrote for this film and, yeah, you know, came up. And that could be how it happened. But it comes across as just...
They do it, you know, so casually.
They do it too. So casually, and they've been doing it for so long that it's just that kind of like, they're sitting down in a deli in New York City and fucking around like that.
Uh-huh.
Or they're sitting in a restaurant in Hollywood and they're fucking around like that. Or they're, yeah, on their their terrace at their house and they're fucking around like that. That's how it comes across. And yeah, I love that about the Marx Brothers.
Yeah. This is,
and I think Duck Soup is the one that has where Harpo keeps hanging his leg on people.
You really need to stop like doing that,
because that's one of the funniest
bits. I'm really excited to see this goddamn movie now, and it better not suck.
Oh, I hope it doesn't, because I don't think it will. But I tell you what, though, there are things that we gotta cover this one last thing.
Oh, okay.
Let me readjust. Okay, there is a scene in this film that was. The original idea for the scene was that they would stuff a whole bunch of people into Groucho's stateroom, which is very small,
God,
and put his trunk in there, which takes up a third of the room.
Uh-huh.
And then this is how Alan George and Chico and Harpo have stowed away onto the ship.
Uh-huh.
Come on board in his trunk, unbeknownst to Groucho at this point. But he's gone through a series of... He's seen several staterooms now at this point on his way to his stateroom.
Yeah.
They put him in here, and it's this tiny little room with a cot. And he's like, but this can't be. And they're calling it a suite, and it's awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
So they shove the trunk in there, and then he has to move the trunk around to actually get into the room. Okay. So the original idea of the scene was to stuff a bunch of people into the room and force Groucho to go outside into the corridor to change his pants. And that didn't work.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you how I know it didn't work and why they were able to do this, actually, before I go on with it. Okay, so one of the things that they did with this film was they sent the Marx Brothers on tour to do the Marx Brothery stuff for audiences.
Yeah.
So the room with the stuffed full of people where he goes outside to change his pants.
Uh-huh.
The scenes where they're talking about the contracts and they're ripping the pieces off of the contracts, and I don't agree with that part. Well, we'll just tear that out. What do you got left? Oh, about a foot and a half. You know. So they did that bit. There were several other bits that they essentially playtested in front of audiences. And they would send studio guys with them to take notes and write down what worked and what didn't, and what jokes were happening. You know, did you like this? Did they like that? How did the audience react?
Yeah.
And so they were able to gauge how the comedy would play in different parts of the country, and they adjusted it so that they got like the best of. They'd play several nights in a place, and they'd get the best jokes, and basically.
So it's kind of like what they do in a read-through now.
Or screening.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did it a whole bunch of places, and they came back and they made this film. Now, what happened was that scene where everybody stuffed into this room,
yeah,
wasn't working.
Okay.
So they basically just said, all right, let's just put everybody into the room.
Let's see how many people we can stuff in the phone
booth.
Then
the joke will be when she opens the door, everybody spills out.
Okay.
So they reshot the on the day, they reshot the scene there when they were shooting the scene, and they basically ad-libbed it.
Nice.
And they just brought a whole bunch of all the people that were going to be in the room, because they were just going to be in there kind of standing around.
No, they needed to be.
And they basically said, Harpo's going to be sleeping.
Uh-huh.
Chico's going to be trying to figure out how to get Harpo off the bed, because so they bring in two maids, a manicurist,
an engineer,
his assistant,
a cleaning lady
with a mop and bucket, Harpo, Chico, Groucho,
Pretty Boy,
Alan Jones, and then there's like 15 people. And then the three stewards who bring...
Four stewards.
There's four stewards who bring trays of food that they've just ordered.
That and also the fact that the assistant was about twice the size of everyone else.
Well, that was funny, too. The engineer's assistant was a monster of a man. So basically, they end up with 15 people in this room.
Yeah.
And they're all moving around and jockeying for position, and Harpo is... He's like laying down on people, and then he gets, you know, like
yeah, he's on top of the serving trays
at the end of the thing, and then the rich lady comes along and opens the door, and everybody spills out.
That's funny,
you know.
That was a really
and it's funny even knowing that going in, and that's kind of a poor description of the funniness of this film, of this thing. Even knowing that, that's going to be a damn funny scene, because I've seen it, I don't know, 100 times, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's still hilarious. And actually getting to watch this and see my kids, who are both teenagers, who are so jaded when it comes to comedy and whatever.
Fuck off. That whole movie was fucking hilarious.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Groucho always maintained that he wasn't a dirty comedian, so he didn't do swear words.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are some pretty, pretty good double entendres. In his comedy.
Yeah, dirty doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't swear. It means he probably doesn't swear, but that doesn't mean that he can't make jokes.
Made some pretty good jokes.
Pretty lewd jokes. It was pretty good. I loved it.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, as always, you can agree to disagree. You can disagree to agree. You can disagree entirely.
Can they agree to disagree?
Yes.
I don't like that part of the contract.
In varying degrees. We'll just tear that out.
All right.
So, yeah. Contact us.
All right.
On the Twitters. I'm at Mr. Bowen. And you?
At the _fro.
Sweet.
Let's see. What else is there?
The emails.
You can email us. Please, for the love of God, email us. It's so boring in this recording castle. So that is what I have said. We have a recording castle.
We have a record. Oh, who'd you tell that to?
Nobody. This is canon.
News. This is news. This is new information.
We record in a castle.
Special recording castle.
We have our special recording castle.
Yes.
It's in our basement.
Yeah. It's a reverse castle.
It has turrets. It has turrets and a reverse moat. Don't ask us how that works. And it will fuck your shit up.
Yes.
So, but
email us at 100ofsomething@gmail.com. That's 100ofsomething@gmail.com. We will respond to everything that we get.
Yeah.
So please write us.
Please.
Let us know you're out there. Listening.
Every time we get a message, we get to feed some falcons. Please feed the email falcons. Please.
Wow, two new things. A recording castle.
We have a recording
castle.
And
email falcons.
With email falcons.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
So that's that.